may approach. Again, this is State versus Temme.
Thank you. May it please the court, Ms. Brumley. My name is Matt Kosmicki. I represent Mr. Temme and the appellant in this appeal. This is appeal from the District Court of Lancaster County, which had affirmed the decision of the Lancaster County Court overruling Mr. Temme's motion to suppress. This appeal really turns on one issue that's quite simple, is does the stop by the LPD officer pass Fourth Amendment protections? There's no doubt that the Fourth Amendment was involved in this case. Traffic seizures are seizures for Fourth Amendment purposes. There's lots of case law that says that. LPD officer testified it was a traffic stop. He uses overhead lights to stop Mr. Temme. So the question then is what level of Fourth Amendment protections is involved? This isn't a voluntary stop. He uses lights to stop Mr. Temme. There was a submission to the officer's authority. So it really turns on, is this a tier two or two, tier three type of police and citizen contact? And when we look at the Fourth Amendment in that context, I think the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. Was it the stop reasonable under either a tier two or a tier three stop? Mr. Temme submits that it doesn't matter whether it's tier two or tier three, because under either one, it wasn't reasonable for the law officer to seize him. Because under a totality of the circumstances kind of approach, it wasn't reasonable to either one find that probable cause existed to believe that Temme was committing or about to commit a crime, or that for the officer to have, there wasn't a reasonable articulable suspicion that Temme was involved in criminal activity. Under either standard, under either approach, whether it's probable cause or reasonable articulable suspicion, it wasn't reasonable for the officer or for the court to conclude that.
So it's your position that the officer, I mean, your client voluntarily approached the officer, right?
Right.
And in that approach, he's not able to walk very directly. His speech is slurred. Now, the officer admitted he couldn't smell alcohol at that point, but there were some observations.
Some observations, but he didn't. Remember, the officer also said it wasn't grossly like unsteady like you think of in your typical LPD, or I'm sorry, DUI type of stop. He said, you know, it's just a little bit different than normal pedestrian traffic. It sounds kind of innocent, right? And he said, well, his speech is slurred, but I have no idea if that's the way he normally speaks, you know. I mean, I think there would be more to this if he saw Mr. Temme walking out of one of the bars, right, staggering out of the bar. Or some of the case law is, you know, you get a call from someone saying, you know, my relative is driving, you know, drinking, and they're intoxicated, please stop them. I think there's a case out there in York or Saline County or something like that, kind of like that thing. But you don't have that kind of thing here. So you have someone walking in the Haymarket, maybe they're unsteady on their feet a little bit, but it's not grossly like you would think. And, you know, maybe some slurred speech, but no odor, no glassy eyes, you know what I mean, appeared confused, those kind of things. But that isn't the stop, right? That's, I mean, that's part of his totality of the circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm. But what, well, I mean, that's wasn't what there, this, you just mentioned somebody walking out of a bar. The area that they're in was an area where there's a lot of bars.
There are, there is.
It's late at night. Saturday night, I believe. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
And then they also had the testimony with regard to the seeing him in his vehicle, that the lights keep flashing on and off in his vehicle, and it's running at times, not running at times. So there's quite a few factors going on here, aren't there?
Well, the lights flickering, I think, is also indicative of, could be also be considered in on its own, I think, is not suspicious activity. You have to look at it in totality of the circumstance, but I also think there can be innocent explanations for that, right? Like he's starting his car and he's stepping on the brake, doing whatever, you know, messing around in his car. So I think, you know, there's also innocent explanations for those things that don't necessarily lead to criminal activity. And as far as the locale, I know the state cited in their case, or the city cited in their case, Cranwater, you know, the location, you know, he was in this bar area. Well, Cranwater, you know, it can be distinguished. In that case, the LSO officer lived in that neighborhood, right? And he knew all his neighbors, and he knew that the house that Cranwater parked in was where two older ladies lived. And he knows the cars that visit there. He never seen that car visit there before. And it kind of lingered around there, backed in and out. So he knew that. I mean, that's a level of suspicion, right? I don't know who this is. It's really suspicious. They've never been there before. Either they're lost, but I think probably what that LSO officer thought was, is there's some criminal activity here. Someone's trying to break into this place. So I think that Cranwater, when it says holds for the proposition of locality. I think it's more leaning towards, if you look at the facts of that case, an officer's knowledge of that area like that LSO officer had here. Because if you're going to say that, you know, because he's in this place where there's establishments that sell alcohol, I mean, anybody that struggles, you know, if they trip on the sidewalk, well, geez, then they're under the influence and we're going to stop them. So I think that while he cited it, I don't think it's as we argue that it's not as incriminating towards or leads to probable cause or reasonable objective suspicion as the city would argue and that the county court found.
So you don't see Kranowitter, if that's how you say it. You don't see that case as standing for the proposition that if an officer sees somebody who can't walk very steady and maybe has slurred speech and they happen to be in a very densely populated bar area, you know, that's not what Kranowitter stands for?
I don't think that's what that's standing for. When it says locality, if you look at the discussion that case goes into, to me it's that officer lived there. I mean, it's facts specific to that case.
That is different.
Because he lived there and he knew all his neighbors and who visited them. And where in the house particularly where they were two older women, and his concern was there was probably a burglary going to happen or some kind of criminal activity. That's what I think Kranowitter stands for when you read it. I guess we already talked about this, that all the probable cause that it went into, and I tried to distinguish Kranowitter. I just think that simply this wasn't reasonable in any form of the Fourth Amendment analysis that you give. This LPD officer was acting on a hunch, and just like it says in Navarette and Passerini and Anderson and McCulloch, is that just because the hunch eventually proved to be true doesn't mean that it passes Fourth Amendment scrutiny. And I think what I'm trying to get to is to hold otherwise, that it does, that these facts, seeing someone in the Haymarket, there maybe they're, and I guess I really have a, I have to distinguish or have a take a different view of the stumbling. He didn't. It isn't what I think the way he described it isn't what you normally would think of. He said, you know, it's just a little bit more than normal, but it wasn't grossly all over the sidewalk. That's what that meant.
Does it play into it? I mean, he sees him walking, and I believe it's for about a block, if I remember the testimony correctly. Does it play into it that your client specifically gets out of his car and walks to the officer and then doesn't report there's a problem or anything? He just kind of wants to figure out what the officer's doing. Does that play into the reasonable suspicion?
I don't think it's reasonable suspicion for any innocent citizen to walk up to an officer and say, well, you know, talk to him. I mean, he could think that there was something wrong, like there's something going down. I mean, there's all sorts of explanations.
But he didn't tell the officer anything like that.
He just asked if he could help him, right, or what's he doing there. And what the officer's response was, he just said, what was the officer's response? Do you need anything, or how can I help you, or something like that, right?
Right.
So he didn't say, well, I'm just sitting here watching traffic, you know what I mean? So, and, you know, like I said, there are, where the officer was stopped, the way I imagine this, and I kind of get it turned around, is, you know, he didn't see Tim A. close to this bar. It was an area that has bars and restaurants in there, but Tim A. was parked over there. And like I said, it wasn't like he saw him come out of the bar to his car. He's just parked out there, right? And he sees him, when he notices the car, the lights are flickering on and off, and then he parks, the officer parks, and then Tim A. walks over to the officer and talks to him, and then he walks on. You know what I mean? And so if the officer had probable cause like he thinks he'd had or reasonable objective suspicion, he could have stopped him there, right? He said he saw him in the car, operating a car. Well, I see him staggering, walking down the road. Maybe he slurred speech. You know, I think it's a little bit disingenuous that he thought all these things because he could have stopped him then and did something right there. Instead, he goes around the block and then stops him.
Had he observed any crime at that point?
He didn't observe any crime when he got in the car later on.
No, but I mean,
there was no violation of the rules of the road.
The difference is that when he did stop him, he saw him driving. He hadn't seen him driving up until that point.
He saw the car operating before, he said the car was on when he came by when the lights were flickering. So it was operating. So it's the same as just driving down the road. So he could have done all that right then. He knows he's already operating because it was running. The lights are flickering. And then Tim A. contacts him. He doesn't say, come here, I want to talk to you a little bit. You know, where have you been drinking? Didn't do anything like that. He waits, goes around the block, loses sight of Tim A., then stops him.
wasn't the officer's testimony was that he hoped that Timmy would make the right decision and not drive?
That was his testimony. That's right. Right.
There was no body camera video in this, was there?
It's been a while. I don't think so. I don't remember. There's been a lot of tapes and videos and cases since then. I don't remember. Well, I'm into my time. So for reasons argued in our brief, we ask that you reverse the order of the district court, which affirmed the county court, and that they should have sustained our motion to suppress. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Your Honors. Mr. Kosmicki, I'm Marcy Brownlee. I'm a prosecutor with the City Attorney's Office here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I represent the appellee in this case. Pretty apparent from Mr. Kosmicki's comments and the court's comments, this case is fact-dependent, as is most Fourth Amendment challenges on a motion to suppress. The factors in this case, the facts of the case, facts specific, are important. This is, I think, a reasonable suspicion case. That's what I would, I think I argued that at the trial level. I think I'm arguing it here and in my brief. yeah, and reasonable suspicion always turns on facts. Reasonable suspicion is something less than a preponderance of the evidence. It's certainly less than probable cause, something more than a hunch. So those facts have to fall into somewhere in that category. I would argue that it's the totality of the circumstances that are at issue here. Totality of the circumstances would be initially the officer's observations when Mr. Timmy approached his vehicle, approached the cruiser, observations that he made about his walk, his gait, and I think he said dramatically slurred speech, or not just a little bit, but very slurred speech. I think he formed the opinion at that time that he was under the influence of alcohol based upon those categories. Officer Jensen, very experienced officer, I would argue just like in Cranlitter, this is an officer that works 8 hours a day downtown in this area and has for years and years and years at a time where he comes in contact with lots of people who are intoxicated. So just like the sheriff's deputy in Cranlitter, this is an area he's very familiar with. He knows what happens in this area. He has a lot of information about what happens in this area. So I do think the time of day, and I think it's 11:30 at night, the location are just as important in this case as it would be in Cranlitter.
So if somebody had just been in a bar, had one drink, smelled some alcohol on him, and spoke with this officer.
With heavily slurred speech.
With heavily slurred speech. You think that's enough for reasonable suspicion? Once they get in their car, you can pull them over.
Well, and a block's worth of walking on kind of a stumble, you know, there could be an innocent explanation.
If we weren't in that area, if we were in a residential area, different story?
I think that it's less. I think that the area plays a part. I think there's a less
of a... Is it a necessary part? Is it enough just to have the unstable walking and the slurred speech? I mean, somebody could have an impairment that they can't walk, you know, a straight line, or they can't speak clearly. So is that by itself enough?
I think that, I think it's pretty close. So I think it's pretty close, and it isn't what we have here. So I think it's fair to pull in the fact that this is the area that we have. I don't know if it's a different fact pattern, it's a different result.
Does the blinking lights factor in at all?
I think it absolutely does. So I think some of the other impressions that happen here, so we have this odd operation of a motor vehicle. Officer clearly observes that. That's what draws his attention there. And that's odd.
Is the fact that there could be an innocent explanation, does that destroy reasonable suspicion?
Absolutely not. And I think there's some cases that are completely on point with regards to that. I think I cited them in my brief, but specifically, in fact, I made a note. but there's cases on point where innocent explanations doesn't change reasonable suspicion. And I think that happens all the time. I mean, we see people being pulled over for weaving in the lane lines or crossing over the lane lines, and it's because they're arguing with somebody or whatever else, and the fact that it wasn't a driving under the influence doesn't mean that the stop isn't good. So innocent explanation, I don't think that that's a factor in this particular case. And then there's some other odd things, right? So odd for a citizen to approach a police cruiser. It's just kind of odd. And the officer knows that. That's kind of odd. It doesn't happen to him very often. The fact that he drives away and then comes back and then he sees him get back in the vehicle again, that's suspicious to this officer. And I think whether he had, you know, he articulated that pretty well, that this is just not what I usually see. And it all factored into my thoughts that this person should probably not be operating a motor vehicle. So I think it's all fact dependent. I think there's sufficient facts in this case, and we would ask the court to affirm the district court's affirmance of the county court's ruling. And I don't think I have anything further unless you have any questions for me.
Not for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. No more
questions. Thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments. The case will be taken under submission, and you are excused. Our final case of the day, then, is May versus Flanders.